Welcome to Bow Other Friends. Are we friends?
We are friends.
Okay. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. You should trust us because we're librarians. I'm Anna, and it's my definition of early.
I'm Aline, and she's been up for 3 hours. She's just pretending.
Every couple of weeks, we'll get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think, and how we feel. Because we're ladies.
We like to talk about our feelings.
We'll end the show with our current obsessions. Today, we have a very special non-librarian guest.
Super special guest star.
All the way from across the Atlantic Ocean.
In Wales, which has 3 F's in it.
and
a couple
Y's.
Of W's. And Y's.
That's my memory of Welsh road signs.
We will probably have some questions about that. Joining us today is Stephanie Burgess, the author of the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Cat Incorrigible books, and the forthcoming The Dragon with a Chocolate Heart, which is out now in the UK for all you lucky UK listeners, and pending for us American types on May 30th, 2017.
Yes, I pre-ordered it several months back.
Thank you.
We have a very accommodating bookshop.
Yes, Stephanie Burgess, everything that Stephanie writes is well approved here at Bellwether Friends HQ and pre-ordered.
Pre-ordered, approved, given to friends, and generally adored.
It's true.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me. I've been listening to this podcast for a very long time, so it feels very thrilling to be on it.
Oh, that is very sweet. I'm slightly unbelievable, but okay.
Slightly disbelieving. I am tickled to bits. Today we're going to talk about...
Dragons.
Dragons. Yay. I know very little about dragons, so I am looking forward to learning a lot from you.
You need to ask all of the obvious... to you, dragon questions. Like, why would you even like dragons? I don't understand.
What is the allure of dragons? They seem like great big lizards to me.
No, that's just heresy.
Oh, no.
See? So, Aline is here to be our dragon heretic, our dragon agnostic. I'm not up on religious terms.
Okay. That could actually be a great title for an adult fantasy novel, Dragon Heretics.
Yes, it would be. It's probably been taken.
I think we could write it, and I could do, it could be one of those dual written things, like Sorcery.
Can we make it epistolary? Right.
Yes, it can be epistolary, and I can be like, dragons, nope, 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 and you can be like, dragons, woo!
Well, so, I thought we would start by talking about, for the two of us that like dragons, we would talk about why we like dragons, when did we encounter them that made them familiar and friendly, fond creatures for us. And then Aline can explain why she didn't encounter them until later in her life. So why don't you go ahead, Stephanie?
Well, my first encounter with dragons is going to sound really cliche, but in fact, it was The Hobbit.
Yes, well.
And my dad read it to me when I was, really ridiculously young, sometime around 5. And I just remember that scene when he finally gets to the mountain, he sees Smaug, and he's so magnificent and so scary. And so smart, too. Really dangerously smart. And evil, obviously.
Right.
And I was so thrilled by that scene. And I was fascinated by dragons from then on. And, you know, there's some really fun dragons I love that are completely opposite. Like in the actual books of Cressida Cowell's How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
Toothless. The dragon is the funniest dragon I've ever read. He's fabulous. He's like a really selfish and lazy cat, basically.
He does seem like a cat.
Yes. And he's tiny and toothless. And yeah, I love him too, just as much as Smaug in a very different way. So basically, I am pro-dragon in general. How about you?
I am pro-dragon in general. I read The Hobbit, and my next phase was probably wanting to play Dungeons & Dragons and yet not having anyone to play with. So acquiring all the books, which included the spin-off book kind of things that TSR did. Mm-hmm. So I collected all of the Dragonlance books from the beginning for several years, and all the Forgotten Realms books. And as you might imagine, the Dragonlance books involve dragons.
Really?
I know.
Shocking.
Otherwise, it would have been a cheat.
It would have been. There were a few things that I've noticed cropping up before, which is intelligent dragons that can change into human form. dragons on opposite sides, so good dragons, evil dragons. The Dragonlance books, the dragons were different colors, so if it was a red dragon, it was definitely evil. If it was a silver dragon, it was good. All the metallic dragons were good for some reason.
Oh my god, yeah. You just eliminated something for me completely. Because when Katie McAllister wrote those dragon romances, they have red and silver and green and black dragons.
Okay.
Oh, and interesting.
And they are different sects of dragons, and they're basically all these different mafias. And that's okay. I don't mean to interrupt. Please carry on. After Dragonlance, you moved on to, but thank you for sharing that Katie McAllister may not have thought
sure.
it all up on
so
her own.
So I'm not sure I did move on from Dragonlance. I would buy one Dragonlance or Forgotten Realms book per month, approximately, as they were being generated at a high volume in the mid 90s. I would take my allowance money and I would walk from my junior high/high school through the mall to Walden Books. And I would buy whatever was newest.
Oh, I remember Walden Books.
Yep. And then I would read it on the way home. Those books are up there in the corner in case Aline wants to get started with
them. Well, if you want to try a different set, it is bizarre, actually, isn't it? How many dragon romances there are now? And mostly, I haven't been able to get into many of them because even I, who am pro-dragon, am slightly weirded out, you know?
But yes.
Even so, actually, I really love Thea Harrison's Elder Races, adult paranormal romances.
I've heard good things about those.
Yes, they are very addictive, and they're great comfort reads. I always pull them out if I've got a fever or a bad cold or something.
Huh.
So Aline has read Katie McAllister.
So I read the first couple of Katie McAllister books with Aisling Gray, I can't remember if she's a guardian or something to that effect. So if we're going to go all the way back to the dragoning... My mother read me My Father's Dragon by Ruth Stiles Gannett. I have no idea if there's a dragon in this book or not. It is a super old book with a really super striking cover. I remember the cover. I don't remember the story. I learned to read very young, so I don't have a lot of memories of sitting and reading with my mom because she didn't read fast enough to suit me when she was reading out loud. And so I was taking the book out of her hands before I remember much. So I know she read that, and we had that book in our house, and she was not a fantasy person. My mom's a librarian. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everybody knows that. I think I've referenced her before, and she brought home books for me, and it was very convenient to have the book delivery service, and we just didn't touch on a ton of fantasy.
I'm so sorry for you.
Well, I went to the library on my own and chose books on my own, too, and somehow passed over them. I saw the Rankin-Bass Hobbit animated feature.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
77 minutes long when I was a small child and thought it was very interesting and have very vivid memories of looking for the missing scale on people's bellies to poke the knife into and kill them.
So it's very useful. You learned something from it.
Yes, I know what to look for, the chink in the armor, etc. When you mentioned How to Train Your Dragon, I loved, loved, loved How to Train Your Dragon, the movie that I came to as an adult in 2010, so I was 40. But I loved it, and I agree, Toothless is totally like a cat. I even call her a she because she reminds me so much of my small black cat that I had.
Right.
So we love Toothless in our house, and I have loved Toothless. And then I sort of, as a Katie McAllister fan of her humor, I fell into the first couple of Aisling Grays because I would read everything by an author who I enjoy until they lost me by switching gears or something.
Putting dragons in.
Like starting to get And the thing that I found so unsettling was that in these romances, I read romances with explicit sex in them. That's one of my baselines. I prefer that. And these dragons look like men, and they're very dashing men, just like all the vampires and the vampire romances, and they're ultra charismatic. And then,
werewolves,
when they reach their crisis, they like shimmer into dragon form and are all scaly
freaky
for a second. And I'm So I'm not really swaying toward dragons as an adult, even though there is additional.
I don't find them.
Well, that doesn't happen.
Sexually
in the
attractive,
novels.
Right? Exactly.
Oh, thank goodness! I'm glad. I'll check out Thea Harrison because that sounds better to me than the way Katie was covering it.
So let's segue into book. Tell us about your new book and where, what your inspiration was, why you decided to go with it. Did you just wake up one morning and think, I need to write this book?
Well, not exactly, but there was sort of sleep and waking involved because I was on my way to bed. And somehow, I think I had actually started a different book. I was going to write another adult book at that point, and I'd started it. I'd written the first chapter and a half or so. And then I was very sleep deprived. This is probably part of my general scattiness at this point, because I had a young baby and he was finally asleep. And thank God I got to go to sleep. And I laid down and the lights were out, and suddenly I like jerked out of bed because I had this amazing opening in my head, and it was right there. It was her voice. And there was almost nothing that could get me to give up sleep at that point in my life.
So it was, you know, it was meant to be.
Exactly. And mine is about a dragon, a very fierce young female dragon who is convinced that she is the most ferocious thing in the mountains and is incredibly frustrated because her overprotective adult, the family members, insist she has to stay with her brother inside their mountain doing lessons for the next 50 years until her scales have hardened.
Oh, man.
Yeah, she's not about to do that. That's not the kind of dragon she is. So she heads out. She thinks she's going to prove her ferocity to her family and prove that she's strong enough to be let out by catching a human, which is the most dangerous prey of all. And unfortunately, the human turns out to be a secret food mage, and he tempts her into drinking the most delicious hot chocolate, which turns her into a human girl with no wings, no claws, no fire. It's horrible. But at least she does have one thing now, which is this absolute draconic passion for chocolate. She'll do anything to get more of it. So she heads to the city, and
super
after many girls,
relatable
chocolate shop. Exactly. In the beginning, one of the issues for her is that she's supposed to be finding her passion, because every dragon has a particular passion they devote their life to. And, you know, her sister is this amazing poet that everyone worships except for her. And, you know, her brother's a philosopher, and she has not found it. She just wants to get out and have adventures. And then she discovers chocolate, and that is it for her. And so she goes and she gets a job at the quirkiest possible chocolate shop, because that's the only place that would hire a girl like her, who is still very much a dragon inside, and she does not think like humans think. And she's still a dragon, so she's going to do whatever it takes to defend her territory. And so many hijinks ensue, and she makes a lot of chocolate and drinks a lot of chocolate along the way.
This is a combination of all things I like, and I'm eagerly awaiting May 30th.
That's awesome. Little G is going to love it too.
Yes.
It sounds really, really fun. If you haven't seen the cover, we'll link to it in the show notes.
I think there's a different UK and US cover, is that right?
Yeah, very different, which is, it's the same publisher, it's Bloomsbury, in both countries, but they came up with very different covers.
I think they're both.
I think they're both really good in different ways.
Well, I like the UK one that I'm looking at right now, which we have opened up, and we will probably love the US one, which we'll link to both. If you have overseas connections, you can do that. I forgot to say earlier, after having read Cat Incorrigible with my very dear friend Curiosity Jones, we had talked about them and knew there were more books coming, and for some reason weren't thinking about the internet very much, but I was going to Scotland, and so I managed to find the second book in Scotland and carry it home for us to read.
Oh, that's so nice.
It was pretty exciting, and also a lot of fun to go into every bookshop in every town we stopped in Scotland and demand it.
So we need it right now.
Demand out there in the streets as well.
I appreciate that very much.
Well, we try. We try to do that for all of our friends.
I just had a note that says The Hero and the Crown, which I definitely also read at a young age, along with The Blue Sword by Robin McKinley. And there's on the Wikipedia page for The Hero and the Crown, there's a fabulous dragon.
Oh, it's gorgeous, that cover. Or at least the cover
beautiful.
I remember from my childhood.
The Blue Sword cover, oh, I love those covers.
So, The Blue Sword may very well be the very first in a long, long history since of books that I checked out from the library and kept overdue long past when I ought to have done and returned unread.
No.
Isn't that dreadful?
It is dreadful.
I can see this gorgeous,
like,
shiny book sitting in my room, and I know I never read it.
Well, the most worrying thing about that is that it's one of those books, I loved it so much and I discovered it. I read it again and again as a young teenager, but I have been too scared to read it as an adult because I'm afraid it might be a little dated politically.
Yes, I agree. There are certain books like that where you are afraid to go back.
Right.
The memory is better. better than what is probably the case. Or guest on the show, Angie and I watched some original Gem and the Holograms in college, and we were like, oh no, we should not have done that.
Right. Well, and you're revisiting things with Little G that you are experiencing again. And some of them hold up and some of them don't. Aren't you watching?
We are watching Thundercats season one at the moment.
Right. And it seems like we watched some Powerpuff Girls, which did hold up.
Well, I don't think we watched original Powerpuff Girls. We watched the reboot.
Oh, okay.
But he and I watched some He-Man and She-Ra. And we happened, this is a complete digression, but there's a He-Man episode, which I recommend. We'll have to find the name of it. But it's totally about his mother, who was like a pilot from Earth and crash landed on his planet and married the king. And she is the one that has to like get her ship out of the museum where it is currently on the planet and like fly out and rescue everyone in this episode. It's really good.
Now see, that I would watch because I've never felt any appeal to watch, you know, He-Man, but that convinces me.
I was like, right. Wow, your mom is really awesome. Let's watch the show based on her.
Indeed. So, and that was just the first of what I imagine will be many digressions. This is Bellwether Friends after all.
So, let's set ourselves this task.
Okay.
Stephanie.
Oh.
Yes.
If we wanted to get Aline here to read a dragon book, what do we think she would read? I was thinking she might like the first one of the Enchanted Forest Chronicles.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Where she goes to work for the dragon to get away from all the horrible princes who keep wanting to marry her.
Yes.
Oh, this is good. So does she become a governess and then the dragon falls in love with her?
No.
No. Okay. Completely not.
Just checking.
And one of the coolest things is the dragon she goes to work for, hopefully this isn't too much of a spoiler, eventually becomes the dragon king, even though in fact she is female. And I cheered for that as a teenager,
that's
especially.
Excellent. I embrace all spoilers. It's really the best way to get me to read something because really I don't like to not know.
Yes, no romance between her and the dragon, but she does get a lot of mentorship from the dragon in how to be sort of a powerful woman.
This is good. I can appreciate that. I like funny. Are there any funny dragons?
How to Train Your Dragon, the books are hilarious. This is horrible to admit, I have not seen the movies because I know the movie plot and characters are so different from the books.
Yes, they are.
And I love the books so much, I haven't been able to unbend. Is unbend or is it bend the word? Anyway, I haven't been able to relax and just watch the films. And I need to at some point because my kids love them. But the books are hilarious.
I think that they are really, really charming. The movies. Mm-hmm. We've seen both of them. I've seen both of them a few times and occasionally have feelings about book to movie translations. And I mostly enjoy the storytelling in its self, standalone self. I don't get mad about digressions, really.
Right.
Myself. But a lot of...
For some reason, those characters are so important to me from the books that it's hard to see different people with their names doing different kinds of things than they would do.
Yes.
Have you read any of the Marie Brennan memoirs of Lady Trent?
Ooh, yeah, those are good.
And, well, the covers themselves are beautiful. But the heroine is an unconventional lady in sort of an alternate 19th century. And
I'm sorry. I do like an unconventional
right,
lady.
I know, that's what I'm saying. So she wants to be a dragon naturalist. She wants to learn all about dragons, and she goes out into the field and tries to observe them.
So like Jane Goodall?
Kind of.
Diane Fossey?
Sort of.
Okay.
So that might be a possibility.
They're very good. And I have to admit, when they were first announced, the sale, I felt the most bitter jealousy I've ever felt toward another writer because I thought,
That's a great idea.
Right.
But she does it brilliantly, you know. So she I enjoy the books now. I've let go of the jealousy.
I have not caught up on the last couple, but they are always on my list.
Well, the covers are spectacularly beautiful.
They really are.
As usual, we'll link to everything we talk about in the podcast in our show notes.
Rigorously.
I just thought of another thing to try to push my obvious obsession with How to Train Your Dragon books. But I can't remember. Aline, are you a David Tennant fan?
Yes.
Well, he is the one who narrates the audiobooks, and they are brilliant. He is just brilliant at it.
Okay. This is good. I listen to audiobooks sometimes when I'm home by myself, because my car commute is not very long, and so I don't get a lot listened to on my way to work, except the Trolls soundtrack and Hamilton selections. But
right.
I will have to look into those, because that's a good selling point for sure.
It's brilliant, and he gets to use his own Scottish accent to do the narration. It's just very good.
I listened to the first one, and it was very good. I can confirm. Casey, we're wondering.
Excellent.
What has she got?
A sidebar for the kitten eating something that we don't recognize. I think it's just a piece of dirt.
I think it's a stick.
A stick. Where did she get a stick?
A tiny stick. Maybe it's a really long pine needle.
It's a piece of wood she's looking.
Do you have a number one dragon book that you wish everyone would read that isn't How to Train Your Dragon?
Ooh, now that made it trickier.
Or your own book.
Yes. Well, obviously, I really want people to read my book. But apart from that, gosh, I'm sure everyone's already read The Hobbit if they have any interest in The Hobbit.
Probably.
But, you know, I do continue to love The Hobbit.
It's worth a reread as well.
Yeah. And then it all gets into specifics. I have such a hard time giving universal recommendations.
Okay.
Like, if you're a romance fan, I think you should read Dragonbound by Thea Harrison. And if you're a middle grade fan, The Tale of Two Castles, that's the one I wanted to say. It's so good. It's about this girl who travels off to become an apprentice actress, but she doesn't get into the theater troupe and ends up, as her disappointing fallback, having to become the assistant to a dragon detective.
Oh, this sounds very good.
It is so much fun.
I think
and
you got Ellen with
end,
that one,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
It is fabulous. It's got this nice message because, you know, people are barely scared of the ogre in that town. Everyone talks about, oh my God, the horrible ogre. And then she goes to work for this dragon, all these things. And it's a message about sometimes the people who seem very scary on the outside are actually the more trustworthy ones. And, you know, you shouldn't judge by appearances and so on. But actually, it's just a really fun adventure with a girl who gets to study being a detective with a dragon. So I love it.
For picture book, I recommend Dragons Love Tacos.
Ooh.
Which is very silly. We own a copy here and have read it many times.
Oh, Dave Pilkey, Dragon's Fat Cat. There are some readers that have a blue dragon as the central character. And my
Ooh.
Favorite is Dragon's Fat Cat. And they're adorably illustrated. They're the Captain Underpants guy, but they're
yeah.
sweet and charming.
That is fabulous. My kids love his book so much, but all we have are the Captain Underpants and Dogman. We don't have.
Oh, so
I've never even heard of that one.
I think there's more than one dragon book, but Dragon's Fat Cat is the one
that comes to mind.
Fabulous.
Because it's a cat.
Right. Understood.
Oh, and there's a really fabulous picture book my kids love. It's called Raising Dragons by Jerdine Nolan. I'm probably mispronouncing it. I don't know if it's Jerdine or Jerdine. Anyway, it's about this girl, the artwork. It looks like, I would guess, probably her family are living maybe around the 1930s, as sharecroppers in the South, something like that. Yeah, I could be wrong, but it's this beautiful, beautiful artwork of this girl on her farm discovering a dragon egg and raising it and, you know, finding out what her passion is, because, you know, her dad's passion is for farming, and it turns out her passion is raising dragons, and it becomes sort of a dragon governess, and it's really, really lovely.
Other classics, like The Paper Bag Princess, for example. Mm. There was a picture book called Have You Seen My Dragon? I remember liking the art in that one as well. It's like dragon in the cityscape, and it's sort of an interesting contrast between the two.
Mm,
but
right.
For adults, my favorite dragon series is the Naomi Novik alternate history Temeraire series, where especially the audiobooks, which are narrated by our audiobook friend, Simon Vance.
Oh, Simon. I'm going to try to push that one. We are part of a reading group in this area, a librarian reading group that looks at different genres every couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
And our next one up is alternate history. And we all read one benchmark book together, and then we choose one of our own titles. And I'm trying to push the first Temeraire book as the benchmark for alternate history.
So I know your boss thinks mm-hmm. it will be too fantasy, but aside from the fact that there are dragons, it's very seagoing narrative military.
Mm, absolutely. It's like Patrick O'Brien with dragons.
It really is.
Which I think that it's legit. I think that alternate history has to have fantastical elements, whether the author thinks that or not, because if it's not got some other element going on, then all it is the narrative of the maniacs.
I have, I think, 1.5 books left of that series because I'm a little sad about finishing it. But I've listened to them specifically because Simon Vance does the narration. He's very good.
Oh, yes, excellent. Indeed.
I am in the middle of reading Serafina.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
Which Margaret gave me a copy of, and I have, as she has impeccable taste, have intended to read it for some time, but it was the scheduling of this episode that made me think, all right, fine, I'll start reading Serafina.
Well, I have to make a confession, which is 2 different people gave me Serafina.
Oh, there you go.
My last agent sent me a copy, and also the editor for my adult books sent me a copy because she said, you're going to love this. You really need to have this. And I started reading it, and I thought, this is wonderful. And like 20 pages in, I thought, I can't read this yet because my second book in my new middle grade series is about a girl who is best friend of the dragon from the first book. Uh-huh. And she's negotiating some unrest, you know, between the dragons and the people.
Oh, yeah. And it sounds a little close there.
Yeah, I thought I have to finish this book and do all my edits before I actually read Serafina. So I read the first 20 pages. I thought they were wonderful, and I'm looking forward to finishing it someday.
I am only slightly farther on than you, but I think it's right up my alley, as I would expect from something handed to me by Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret.
She has amazing taste.
She really does. I'm just looking at my list here. I'm not sure I recommend anyone read Beowulf, but there is a dragon in it. If you're feeling like you need to get back to the heart of
dragoning
our Nordic roots or whatever, I did read some of it.
Is St. George in Beowulf?
No.
Okay, just checking. I was just thinking about St. George and the Dragon. I know about that. I have a lot of that art.
You know what's one of my favorites is Terry Pratchett's Guards, Guards.
Oh, yeah, I have that on my list.
Yeah, so much fun, and it manages to be funny and have some genuinely scary moments also, and say all this stuff about the way, you know, governments allow, or people allow terrible things to take place. I love it so much. I've read it about 5 times.
I am trying to find the name of a book I reviewed for Booklist, which was The Dragon Lord's Fool's Gold. If you don't like dragons and you want to see them being defeated and you want a very profane read in which there's a lot of gore and swearing, you could try Fool's Gold by John Hollins.
The description says, Guardians of the Galaxy meets The Hobbit in this rollicking fantasy adventure.
It's definitely a heist story, and it has very amusing points, but if you have a soft spot for dragons, I'm not sure it would be for you.
How many female characters are there?
That's a good question. At least one. No, I think there are two. I think there are 2 in the group of 5.
Okay, well, that's not bad considering.
So, speaking of female characters, I was wondering about female dragons. I assume that they are the minority. Aline's pointing at Anne McCaffrey to me. I did read those once upon a time.
Yeah, me too. I remember reading them, many, many of them, when I was in 6th grade and thinking they were wonderful, but it's been, years.
I have not revisited, and I don't know how they hold up.
Okay. I just know that Anne McCaffrey books were the ones that were underfoot when I was a teen, a tween, whatever you want to call them. And I've known a lot of people in my life who were very passionate about the Anne McCaffrey books and continue to read them now, which is interesting to me, but I don't know them. And it doesn't surprise me that y'all read them way back and are not currently reading them, because my impression of them is that they are of their time or of your time at that age, even though I don't know them. That's just the vibe I get.
Yeah, they're another one I've been afraid to go back to, possibly irrationally, and maybe they would be great, but I've been slightly wary.
Yeah, they seem like The Hero and the Crown, where maybe we should have kept them in the late 80s or whatever.
Right.
And as far as I can tell, there's not a huge call for Anne McCaffrey books.
No, I don't.
Nowadays,
I think
it's unlike David Eddings, who we talked about 20 episodes ago. People are still asking about David Eddings. I don't see that with Anne McCaffrey, which is kind of sad. So female dragons, I'm going to segue us over into movies, because the only female dragon I can remember from the movies is the one in Shrek.
Because she has eyelashes.
Yes,
and she falls in love with the donkey.
Right, she falls in love with the donkey. But it seems to me that the same issues that we have with humanity, we have with portraying dragon kind. I was telling Ellen that she's seen a lot more dragon movies than she thinks. So, for example, Neverending Story.
Right, and mm-hmm. this one, I forget that Falcor is a dragon because he's got fur. And
yeah,
I didn't
think
realize that dragons were mammalian. And I think that if more dragons had eyelashes and fur, they would be better loved by the kitten crowd.
Probably,
like me.
Probably. Pete's Dragon, I did not see the remake of that.
No, I haven't seen it either. My 8-year-old saw it with my mom and he enjoyed it.
Yeah, so did little G. He enjoyed it and said that we should see it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a vague memory of it, but my brain is overlaying Peter and the Wolf.
Okay, that's good. I think it's pretty much the same plot.
I'm imagining the oboe and everything, so carry on.
I always get Dragonheart and Dragon Slayer mixed up, but I think that Dragonheart is the one with Sean Connery.
Yes, yes it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who has, like, half of his heart is in the guy.
It's very a Horcruxy, yes.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot of memory of
sadly,
it.
Sadly, I haven't seen that one.
I think it was sad.
Wasn't it in the 80s?
The 80s or the early 90s?
Something like that. It seems like something, it's in my memory. My movie memory
96,
timeline.
96.
Dang, that's
well,
weird.
Well, they had it was a CGI dragon mostly.
But I saw in a movie theater, and that seems a little late for that.
Oh, Dennis Quaid.
Right.
Dina Meyer.
Hey. David Thewlis. Yeah. Okay, right. Maybe we should see that. How is it rated? Can we see it with little G?
I think I have seen it with little G.
Well, they're the dragons in the Harry Potter films. I really love those, especially the one in the second to last film where they escape from the bank on its back.
Oh, yes, that was a good one.
Yeah, that was fabulous.
I think they've done a good job of animating dragons. Harry Potter.
They've done a good job with all their magical creatures.
This is true.
The griffin was amazing. I still remember watching, was it number 3? Watching the scene where he's flying over the water with on the griffin's
back.
Yes, with
the reflection. Beautiful. We were talking about the dragon in Mulan.
Yes, if you mm-hmm. want me to really like a dragon, then you can make it like toothless, like a cat, or you can voice it with as Eddie Murphy and have it be a tiny pocket-sized thing with a bad temper. And then you mentioned donkey, and I was like, Eddie Murphy has the best sidekick animated roles. So, yeah, but I liked the dragon in Mulan. I had there was a McDonald's around the block from my library when I was in my 20s, and we would get the Good Happy Meal toys. Because, you know, we would go to lunch and get the Good Happy mm-hmm. Meal toys, and I had the dragon from Mulan on my desk.
I did not know this.
For a portion of my library career.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Switching to television, Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like could have a lot more dragon action than it does.
The baby dragons don't come till the very, very end of this first season.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It could have a lot more dragon action than it does.
I liked them when they were babies because they were like the Eddie Murphy dragons.
You and the pocket-sized dragons.
Yes.
So, which just makes me think about what dragons are most appealing. I think the ones that have higher intelligence
mm-hmm.
and some kind of their own society are more appealing than the ones that seem to be just ginormous creatures that people are trying to tame.
I like to think of them as being quite dangerous and dangerously intelligent, but on their own terms. They're not just humans with scales.
Yeah.
You know, they've got their own ways of looking at the world, which is quite alien and, you know, somewhat reptilian. I think that's what makes them fun.
That is something that Serafina does very well. So mm-hmm. her mentor is a dragon. She's always having to check his reaction to her because he's a dragon and he doesn't interact with her like a person and his reactions aren't going to be like a human's. And it's sort of brought up. The differences are subtly explained. It's kind of like dealing with someone who just doesn't understand what you're talking about.
Well, and it looks mm-hmm. like that's something that Stephanie does in her book too, where mm-hmm. her dragon is transformed into a little girl who doesn't see the world like little girls do and is challenged by fitting in, as many of us are. I'm not a dragon, by the way.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Okay.
But I like that. I don't like the anthropomorphization, that's a good one, of dragons. I'm fine with them having intelligent eyes and Sean Connery's voice, but I agree that they're different, and I like them to be different.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can be allies. I don't like them to be cattle. They're cattle in mm-hmm. some representations, but I think that they can be allies and companions in and not necessarily Absolutely. Just a source of fear and an object for the expression of toxic masculinity.
Right. Which is where St. George gets you often.
Yes.
Although the St. George illustrated book that Margaret gave Little G is beautiful. Yes.
Well, you know, I live in Wales, and the national mascot is a dragon. I mean, you go everywhere.
True.
You know, if you just walk through town in my small, very small town, you can get 10 zillion different things with dragon patterns on them. We're very proud of dragons here, whereas when I lived in England before, you know, St. George, I still remember the first time I walked past the city square, and it was St. George's Day, you know, and I'm definitely living in the dragon's country now.
Instead of the dragon vanquisher's country.
Right.
Yes. Very good.
There's no tension there.
None at all.
So let me think. I couldn't come up with very many other television shows other than there is a How to Train Your Dragon TV show that
yes, takes the movie. Yes, my characters. Sons are addicted to.
Yes, we have watched a bunch of that. I did watch the first two Hobbit movies, the bloated adaptations, yeah. And I think that Benedict Cumberbatch's Smaug was impressive, mm-hmm. But I thought that we didn't need to have that many minutes.
No, I strongly agree.
77 minutes of Rankin Bass animation.
Yeah, way better.
We covered the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched the Rankin Bass actually again last summer with my 8-year-old, and I was actually really impressed by it again because I loved it so much as a kid that, again, I was slightly worried about watching it as an adult. And
it holds up pretty well. We watched it, yeah.
Yeah, I still loved it. You know, it wasn't just a nostalgic love. I thought actually, you know, it covered the themes of the book and the main great adventure moments and everything. I thought way more efficiently than the new Peter Jackson.
Well, yes.
So, and some of the songs are quite catchy.
Yes.
So we watched this movie called The Flight of the Dragons in preparation for this episode because it was on, I did some research of the best dragon movies and it was on more than one of them. And I was like, I have never heard of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also Rankin Bass.
Ooh.
And the premise is that there's a crisis in between the magical world and the growing technological world. And the four dudes want to like create a bubble where they can just put all the magic and they'll be safe forever. And the fourth one, voiced by James Earl Jones.
Oh, right.
Is like the scary evil one. And he's like, no, we're going to, I think all out war would be a better option. Where everyone is destroyed.
The super reasonable wizard guy is voiced by Harry Morgan from MASH. And their conduit to the real world, the non-magical world, is voiced by John Ritter.
Yes.
Of his company fame.
So they have to go forward in time and grab someone who will save them. And that is John Ritter, who is a modern person and gets transported to this dragon world. You ask how many female characters there are. There seems to be one.
One
female character. None of the dragons appear to be female. Mm-hmm. But the one female character is pretty awesome.
She gets Excellent. There.
She's got a bow and arrow. She's a huntress type.
Oh, there's two. There's two. The daughter.
Oh, that's right.
I was thinking about her. I'm like, she's not awesome.
That's true. Sorry, the daughter has awesome like girl. A Princess Leia hair thing going on.
Yeah.
And she is seeing their progress magically. I'm just ignoring her completely.
Probably a good idea. I'm glad you blocked her out.
So I would not say that was a good movie. Like, I think The Hobbit still holds up. This one was more an interesting artifact of its time. And
right.
It was fun to hear Darth Vader's voice come out of a different character.
It was interesting. We mentioned that we had watched it in our Twitter feed, and one of our listeners or readers said that he watches it every year just to remind himself that science triumphs over magic. Spoiler alert.
Yes.
But I thought that was interesting that it was part of someone's fabric of entertainment
at the time.
Right,
yeah. It's strange that it didn't penetrate. It wasn't like on the video, because if it had been at the video store,
you'd have seen it.
I would have seen it and checked, you know, I would have rented it.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
It's strange. We're just introducing it back to the world. Anyone
Check
listening?
Out your library.
Yeah, we got it from the library. I was thinking about dragons in video games, and for the most part, it seems to me that they are antagonists. Little G has been playing Minecraft, and the thing that you have to do at the end is kill the Ender Dragon, and I keep saying, but why? Why can't we just...
Well, yeah, my 8-year-old. He also is addicted to Minecraft, and we've actually gotten on his insistence this How to Train Your Dragon mod, where you can actually train them, which he really likes, because he doesn't want to hurt the dragons.
What does he play it on?
He plays it on a PC laptop.
Okay. Little G has it on the iPad Pocket Edition, so I don't know if we can get...
Yeah, maybe not, because we couldn't get that for our iPad. Okay. But we're also not hugely technologically advanced.
It's all right, you're living in the land of dragons.
Right, you don't need to be.
Magic one here.
So, yeah, that's the part that I find disquieting about Minecraft in particular, is that, you know, winning the game, you have to kill the Ender Dragon. I don't understand.
Yeah.
Why can't you cooperate with it? And he's like, that's what you have to do, Mom. So
no, see, my 8-year-old gets very upset about things like that.
Yes, I get very upset.
Yeah. Actually, that was the one downside for him of the Lego Batman film last week, which he really enjoyed in general, but there's a bit where the ultimate evil bad guys all come down, and it includes the raptors from Jurassic Park, and he's like, but they weren't being bad, they were just being raptors. It isn't bad for raptors to eat people. That's what they do.
We haven't seen that yet, and you know, Little G hasn't been super, when I mentioned it, he was not enthusiastic, which is interesting considering his love of Lego.
Yes, he was oddly uninterested.
So
Yeah, well, my husband and I had different thoughts about it, because unfortunately, I was one of the few people I know who didn't enjoy the first Lego movie because I was just too mad about the sexism.
Right.
But, and the second film, you know, Lego Batman, it's much better on that score. So it's like, okay, yeah, this is just fun. Whereas my husband recognized the sexism in the first film, but it didn't take away his enjoyment of it. And so he was much more critical of the second film on its actual merits. Whereas I was just like, oh, thank God, you know, there's some decent female characters.
Right.
Yes. Yes, sometimes our critiques come away with less if we have some strong ladies. If there's no strong ladies, we're really good at being mad.
Yeah.
That's probably one that we will see maybe from the library at some point.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But I'm sure we will see it because it is a Lego movie. I was just having a mild thought about our culture, and I wonder if there's some diversion point for children where they choose dragons or they choose dinosaurs. Science over magic thing. I wonder if more girls go the dragon route, or maybe they just don't do dragons or dinosaurs at all. They just go off into princess land.
So as a girl who did not choose dragons or dinosaurs, although when we were preparing for the episode, I was trying to decide if dragons were dinosaurs and dinosaurs were dragons. And you're shaking your head, but I'm not certain you can know for sure. But we won't argue about that right now.
I can know for sure.
You can know for sure. Well, I didn't choose dragons or dinosaurs, but I did choose anthropomorphized fuzzy animals like Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. I never read Watership Down, so we don't have to go down that path.
Oh, that's good.
But I did have an interval of reading animals that talked and had societies. Like that.
Right.
And then I went to, and I don't know if this
was. But you didn't read Mossflower or Redwall.
Oh my goodness, no. See, those, I don't know. I guess they had to be living in fields. I honestly don't know.
Okay.
Because I did not spend very much time there. And then I went to realism for about 20 minutes. And
then you went to romance.
No. Then I read Stephen King.
Oh, okay.
And I started reading Stephen King when I was like 10 or 11.
Okay.
Well, he had a dragon because we were read in seventh grade. Our seventh grade English teacher read us Eye of the Dragon.
Oh, which I loved. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is and continues to be what I call my favorite Stephen King book. So I may have a predisposition to dragons and just not know about it yet.
This is so sweet.
Because I loved the visceral writing and the feelings that his writing, the terror that his writing evoked, which I think segued me from being 10 into reading romance, because I started reading romance when I was 12 or 13. And I think that those sort of like visceral feelings that you have when you're reading are really what brings people into books whenever it happens for them. And then it's incumbent upon their librarians and their parental units to keep feeding that as it evolves.
This is true. Yes.
There's a philosophy right there.
This is good. I was just trying to think about why, you know, why some people like dragons.
Yeah.
Or why two of us have liked dragons for a long time and continue to like them as adults, but other women might not. Most women might not. I don't know. I don't know what the division of dragon-liking adults is. But
I don't know. I do know I loved dinosaurs also, but when I was six, I knew every Latin name of a dinosaur that there was. And I don't know that I grew out of it, but I stopped wanting to be a paleontologist after I was six.
Right. So did little G. He moved on from that.
Yeah. But it happens to many of us.
It does.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I think that if you're related, maybe that's it. Ha ha ha. It's the reading, whether you are reading for the story or reading for the characters or reading for the language. Mm-hmm. I am a character reader and I want and need to identify strongly with a character in what I read. And I have the capacity to identify with a whole lot of things, but not dragons, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe, okay. Interesting.
And I always had pets, and so I would be able to identify with a dragon caregiver or keeper or companion. But
not necessarily the dragon themselves.
But not necessarily the dragons. But I don't know.
Interesting.
Don't know.
And it's funny because I've never had any problem empathizing with the dragons, despite the fact that in real life, I am so not a lizard person at all.
And I love lizards.
There you go.
I loved them. I lived in the tropics as a tiny person, and I was accustomed to lizards and iguanas and such.
As I've said, the Ender Dragon gets me every time.
Maybe our listeners can
write us on Twitter or on Facebook and tell us if they have always liked dragons or what they think about the theoretical dragon gender divide or the dinosaur dragon divide.
Yes. Or the dinosaur cat divide.
Oh, the dinosaur cat divide. Dinosaurs and birds on one side.
Right.
Cats on the other side. Yep.
It's funny.
We didn't talk about Jurassic Park.
Tell us what's funny,
Stephanie, then we'll go back.
I was just going to say, actually, this conversation was bringing up for me this memory of my most culture shocky, not between British and American, but just like between different kind of people moments in parent-teacher conferences, which was when my older son was 4 and his nursery's teacher said to me in a parent-teacher conference, I think he spends too much time thinking about dinosaurs. I was like, what?
Is that possible?
That's
exactly
right. I don't think that he's spending enough time thinking about dinosaurs, my dear lady. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I just thought, were you ever 4? Because, I mean, maybe I was closer to 6 when I had my dinosaur obsession, but it was intense for a while.
Yeah, right?
So, I know that dinosaurs aren't dragons, and dragons aren't dinosaurs, according to Anna, the world according to Anna, but when I had read Jurassic Park, the summary came out for some reason, it was when I was in college, and people were reading it, and I don't usually do that, but I read it that summer, because it was one of those compulsive reads, and then the movie came out much later, and I remember going to see the movie in the theater, and starting to cry. When the dinosaurs like walk onto the screen, when, you know,
yes,
Laura Dern and Sam Neill come bursting out of the brush, and the not brontosauruses, I don't remember what they call them now, but they're like sauntering across this field, and I was just like, and I started crying. And if you watch it now, the CGI is atrocious, but it was so much better than anything I had seen until that point that I was just...
Yeah. Yes. And actually, I've just recently rewatched it with my older son. And although the CGI is terrible, the sense of wonder is really still there.
I haven't seen it ever.
We should watch it. Little G doesn't get that
really
freaked out by the frightfulness.
That's true.
Did you watch it with your 8-year-old, Stephanie?
Yeah, I did, and it was no problem. We haven't watched number 2 because I've never seen it, but I've been told by some other adults that I should hold off for a few more years, but number 1 was absolutely fine.
Okay, good. Well, and like I said, Little G doesn't get frightened of, like, frightening situations, so I think it would probably be
a
good thing. Right, Anna would.
But as long as I can hide behind you on the couch, it's fine.
I didn't love Jurassic World, the new one, but I still love Jurassic Park, the original.
Okay. I think I might not have read the sequel book and I didn't see the sequel movie.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. I'm glad to have that endorsement because that will be our meeting of the dragon dinosaur minds.
Excellent.
Somehow.
Well, you know, if you think about it, dinosaurs eventually evolved into birds somehow, right? So there was this intermediary
somewhere,
point.
Somewhere there was a division. Mm-hmm. Dinosaurs evolved into birds, but another branch of dinosaurs evolved into dragons, and we just can't see them. Because they're in a pocket of magic created by the three remaining guys.
Absolutely. Oh, my poor husband is going to be like, his blood vessels will be bursting when he hears me say this. Okay, he's a scientist.
It's perfect. This one's for you. Okay, so.
Oh, I should have said, oh my God, books about dragons. I can't believe I didn't say them. My husband has a fabulous middle grade series. It's set on Mars in 1816, so it's in the marriage of science and magic. And in this world, Mars used to be ruled many thousands of years ago by the ancient Martian emperors who flew around on their dragons. And now all that's left is the old architecture, some of it, and the native Martians, and these tombs, these amazing hidden dragon tombs that are always full of incredible treasure. And there is a dragon egg that becomes very important in the second book, The Emperor of Mars. So that is another very important dragon recommendation on my part.
Awesome. Now tell us your husband's name so that our listeners...
Yes. God. It's Patrick Sampire.
Awesome. I'm excited. I was hoping that you would talk a little bit about his books, but you are here on your own recognizance and I was not going to bring him up myself.
No, you should, because what you have to remember is I'm actually extremely tired and scatty this week because I went away on this trip for World Book Day to present it to 500 students to talk to about World Book Day and books and dragons, and it was fabulous, but I got no sleep. I can do with all the helpful reminders you've got.
We are really glad that you were able to squeeze us in, because that is definitely a big week for anyone.
Schedule. I have had Secrets of the Dragon Tomb on my to-read list for a while now as well.
It is fabulous, and I'm not just saying that because I'm married to the author. It is actually true. I really love it.
I've heard good things from others besides you, so I'll go with that too.
So I just want to go down. I have a few things on my dragon to read list that I haven't read yet. I'm in the middle of Serafina. I've always wanted to read Elven Bane by Andre Norton, but have not accomplished it.
Really?
There's a book called Talon by...
Julie Kagawa?
Kagawa, yes. Kagawa? Sorry, I can't read my own handwriting.
Oh, I saw her speak. She was really nice.
So I want to read that.
And she writes teen books. Is that one teen?
I think so.
I mean, she crosses over, of course, but one of her series, Iron something or other, is teen.
I can't believe I forgot to mention earlier in my influences that I read Tad Williams, The Dragonbone Chair, and all of that ginormous Doorstopper series, which he has suddenly decided to start writing sequels to. So that will be one of those that I'm going to try to revisit and we'll see how it holds up. And while I was weeding the science fiction and fantasy paperbacks the other day, weeding being the technical term for deciding whether to keep this on the shelf or not, mm-hmm. I came across this series by a wife team, mm-hmm. Jada Jones and Danielle Bennett. And the first one is called Have Mercy, and it seems to be about steampunk metallic dragons.
Huh.
And it has gay male protagonists.
Okay.
Interesting.
I thought, well, that's interesting. I'll keep it on the shelf.
It's like we ordered it from a catalog or
it
something.
Kind of, yeah. So I don't know anything about it except many of those things appeal to me. Wife writing teams and gay male steampunk dragon. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea what it's about beyond that.
Give it a try.
Well, I have a new book that's actually arriving sometime today. It's not new, but it's new to me. G.A. Eichen, Dragon Actually, which is an adult paranormal romance. I don't know if you guys have read it.
No.
Nope. I've heard of the author.
Yeah, I've read her other books, which she did as Shelley Laurenston. But yes, so the description says, it's not always easy being a female warrior with a nickname like Anwil the Bloody. Men tend to either cower in fear a lot or else salute. And it's true, she has knack for decapitating legions of her ruthless brother's soldiers without pausing for breath, but just once it'd be nice to be able to really talk to a man the way she can talk to Fergus the Destroyer, too bad he's a dragon, you know, etc.
Aha, uh-huh, I see where this is going.
Okay.
Yes. I have no idea how it'll be. It hasn't arrived yet. But
we will see if we can get Aline to read maybe Dragonbound and see if she likes mm-hmm. it.
Absolutely.
Better than Katie McAllister.
Okay.
Oh, there's our cat hissing a clock. So let us segue into our musical obsessions. Aline?
It is Into the Groove by Madonna.
That's what mine was.
Well, that's why we should discuss them in advance. Here, I'll pick a different Madonna song.
I have it down.
I see that you wrote it down. So you can have Into the Groove, and I will take Causing a Commotion by Madonna.
So yesterday and the day before, we listened to a different podcast called Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. And they had a project where they took the Immaculate Collection and they ranked each song. So each of them ranked all the songs and then they combined their scores to do a total ranking of all the songs on the album. And it was an hour and a half of intense discussion of Madonna songs. So I have had an earworm, an Into the Groove earworm, ever since.
And I have had an Into the Groove earworm since Desperately Seeking Susan was released. And one of the things about it is that it wasn't on one of her albums. You can only get it on the soundtrack, and it wasn't ever released as a single. And they talked about all this stuff that I was like, yeah, having all of these 80s memories. And Causing a Commotion is from the Who's That Girl soundtrack, which I have on cassette. And it was a Madonna movie in the vein of Desperately Seeking Susan without all of the charm and downtown grit, but I loved it at the time. And that song is not on the Immaculate Collection if you're looking for it, but it will be on our Musical Obsessions playlist.
It will be. How about you, Stephanie?
Oh, you know what? I go through all these different phases, and right now I've been listening a lot to Merrily We Roll Along, the Cast album, but the one from 2012, because I just watched the documentary Best Worst Thing That Ever Could Have Happened, and it's about the original production of this new Stephen Sondheim musical that was absolutely destined to be a hit, and it was all going to be great, and then it flopped horribly. And it's a really fabulous documentary because it covers what happens to all these people who think they've just gotten this amazing entry into Broadway stardom, and it turned out completely not as they'd expected.
Watch that for our second musicals episode. But am I correct in assuming that you're going to put a Sondheim song on our Musical Obsessions for
I'm afraid I am.
All right.
What song is this?
This one is called Franklin Shepherd, Inc. It's from the 2012 cast album, Merrily We Roll Along, and it's Lin-Manuel Miranda singing it.
Okay.
So that's awesome. And when you started talking about that, I started squirming and dancing and wiggling and twisting because this very week, our beloved Tim Federle of Kill a Mockingbird and Gone with the Gin. Anyway, Tim Federle is hilarious. Follow him on Twitter if you don't know him. Read his books if you don't know him. He tweeted about watching this documentary and crying so hard his boyfriend thought he was choking on his popcorn. And the first book that he wrote is Better Nate Than Ever, which is about a little kid who is 12 or 13 and he runs away from home to audition for a Broadway show. And it is beyond charming if you don't know it. And he wrote a sequel called 5-6-7 Nate. And he's also written some adult books on cocktails, which I appreciate very much. Anyway, I'm so glad that you mentioned the documentary and Merrily We Roll Along, because we don't like Sondheim in our house very much. A Sondheim flop is going to be the best thing for me to watch. Or a documentary about a Sondheim flop.
Okay, let's see if we can get it.
Please don't be very satisfying for you, because it was such a terrible flop. That was the last one, at least at the point of this documentary being made, that Sondheim ever did with Hal Prince. They fell out over it. It went so terribly. So you can get some satisfaction if you don't like Sondheim.
Well, and I'm so sorry about that, because I don't want anyone to have a professional failure or anything like that. I don't like his music, but I don't want anybody to have a bad time, honestly.
Well, one of the nice things is that over the last, 35 years it's been since then, actually the original cast album apparently made its own cult set of fans, and now it's actually performed a lot and people think it's really good. So it was just one of those random,
the wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, so yes, we should definitely watch that and discuss it with Rebecca.
Yeah. So do you have a regular obsession, Anna?
Me? My obsession is Queen Victoria.
Is it? So, in general?
Just in general, no. So I am reading the novel by Goodwin, Queen Victoria, and I'm going to be reading Serving Victoria, which is nonfiction. mm-hmm. that Aileen Got Me a Galley of Once Upon a Time.
Ooh, you have to read, if you read the new Lucy Worsley book.
No.
It's a middle grade novel, and I'm just, this is terrible, I've got it in the next room, but I'm trying to make sure I get the actual name of the book exactly right. My Name is Victoria.
Okay.
And it's about, you know, the bad guy in young Queen Victoria's life, Sir John Conway. It's about his daughter who was brought in to be Victoria's companion.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there was definitely a lot of Sir John Conroy is evil in the novel. And so the Serving Victoria is like a picture of her household and the way things ran while she was queen.
We'll probably mm-hmm. watch the PBS companion piece to the Daisy Goodwin novel.
Yes, although it is right. not winning the poll.
It is not winning the poll. Oh, okay. Yes, our last episode had a poll about our TV bracket. You should vote mm-hmm. in, listeners, if you're listening to this one.
I think by the time this releases, the poll will be closed. But you can still send us a message that says something impassioned about one of the choices, if you wish.
Good idea. And we will probably watch everything mentioned in the bracket at least a few episodes, so you can vote for something that's not in the poll if you want to let us know.
Yes,
by Twitter.
People have already said that we need to watch X after we finish whatever's in number one in the poll.
Yes.
So
my regular obsession is 40 bags in 40 days, the decluttering challenge, which is on the White House Black Shutters blog. It is a process by which you take a look at your house and you make a list of all of the places. It is supposed to be in conjunction with Lent, which is why it's 40 days. And this year, it should have started on March 1st. I am obsessed with tidying and decluttering and getting rid of things that you don't have.
I can tell.
Oh, hush.
By just looking around.
Oh, hush. And
I was just thinking, thank goodness you can't see our house through the Skype.
Our house, we have a very, very full house, of a house that is full of treasures that we hold very dear to our hearts. Mm-hmm. And we still have things that we could probably let go. And I don't try to make anybody else get rid of things. But one of my coping skills is trying to reduce chaos as I perceive it in some way. And so I am always reading about plans to deal with your pile of mail or go through your sock drawer or clear out your basement or whatever. And I never apply all of them. And I never am.
I was going to say you are.
Yeah. I never am, we'll put it in quotes, successful. And I am still interested. And every now and then I will go through a box of something and throw away a bunch of stuff. And I take a bag of things to Goodwill almost every other week. It's just an ongoing process. And I really like to read about these really strict things like Marie Kondo, who we've talked about on the podcast before, and pluck out something that I think is helpful. And this particular plan has a list of the areas of your house to possibly take a look at. And I went through it and I marked off things like, we don't have one of those, or we don't have one of those. But then it was like,
it was like magazine storage. Okay.
Right. We don't have magazine storage because nobody should store magazines. Come on. That was in that other book that I read.
We do have comic book storage.
We do have comic book storage. But then something like, you know, maybe one afternoon we pull all the games out of the game cabinet and we put them back in and we look at the games that are not fitting in the game cabinet and the games that we have in the basement and rotate, which we did a year ago, but maybe we do that again. So that's an ongoing obsession that is a particular one that I'll link to in the show notes for your convenience.
Thanks. I'll make sure to look that up.
Stephanie, do you have an obsession?
I do. It's a Netflix show. It's One Day at a Time. Have you guys seen it?
Yay!
No,
it
not
was
yet.
In the bracket. We
I
haven't
love
seen it, yet.
It so much. You know, it's a fabulous sitcom about this Latina family. The grandma is the one who originally emigrated from Cuba, and she's now living with her single mother daughter. And the grandma is played by Rita Moreno, so she is fabulous. The single mom is a former vet, you know, worked in Afghanistan. She's now back. She's got an injury that she's dealing with on an ongoing basis. And she's just recently gotten a divorce. And she is trying to raise her kids, you know, while dealing with her interfering mother, who's sometimes very helpful and sometimes really, really not. And meanwhile, her older daughter has this amazing coming out arc across the season. And all of these issues come up, but in a very natural way. And the family is so gorgeous. And it's very cheesy and there's a laugh track, but it's so heartfelt. And I love it so much. I've actually watched the whole season twice, which is embarrassing since it only
impressive.
Came out very recently.
It's not embarrassing.
Super high recommendation, though.
Because I imagine you have a lot of things that you would like to watch as well.
Well, and actually what makes it impressive is I hate watching things on my own right now because we've got two little kids and our bedtime process is a nightmare. We've not got it organized well at all. Patrick and I get very, very little time to watch things together. But I love this show so much, I binge watched it on my own and I never do that. And then
you
were like,
you need to watch this. I swear.
You want to call in sick to work?
I can't call in sick today because I'm in charge.
Okay.
But I'll be back later.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yes, we have had that on our radar, and we have heard recommendations from a variety of places.
We saw Rita Moreno on CBS Sunday Morning, was it?
Maybe, yeah.
It seems like we saw it through one of those elderly channels that we have.
Yes, one of the old people things that we watch. So, yes.
The last episode, it just all builds so beautifully. And the last episode, so after I first watched it, I was just pushing it, like everyone I know. I was like, you have to watch one day at a time. You have to watch one day at a time. And a few of my friends gave in because I was so pushy. And every single one of them, every single one said they cried in the last episode. And I cried too. It was just perfect.
I just cried reading something about the last episode on the internet. So, yes.
Exactly.
Well, we made it to the end.
Yay!
So we are going to find the script.
There we are.
Find it. Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at Bellwether Friends. BellwetherFrnds. Oh, character limits. You can find us on Facebook. We're also on Tumblr. We occasionally tumble. If you feel the urge, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. And maybe other people will find us that way. But if you don't, that's fine. We won't hate you.
Implicit threat.
We won't track you down or anything. No, it's not a problem. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SurlySpice.
And Stephanie, where can we find you?
You can find me on my website, which is stephanieburgess.com, and it's STEPHANIEBURGIS, or on Twitter at Stephanie Burgess.
Yay, we're so glad we got the chance to talk to you.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was really lovely.
It was, and I love dragons.
Dragons.
I think everyone should. Sorry.
Oh, dragons.
And if anyone wants to let us know about all the dragon things that we forgot, we welcome your feedback. And we will always add stuff to our to-be-read list.
Always.
And our in-and-out music was provided by the lovely Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulie.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
As soon as my... There we go. Okay.
You have the script?
Rolling. I do have the script. We usually delete a chunk in the beginning. Welcome! All right, I have to start over. Awesome. Maybe I should make you do the script. No? Welcome to Bellwether Friends.
Okay. Really?
You see, it's early. I'm just getting my sea legs.
It's not that early.